From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. Looks like the fourth time may be charmed if you're in line to inherit a billion or two or just some handsome millions. Yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to permanently repeal the estate tax again, their fourth time since 2001. Now the measure is headed to the U.S. Senate and, with some tweaks, could pass. Republicans call the inheritance tax a death tax and want it gone for good. Here's Republican Congressman Phil Gingrich of Georgia during yesterday's debate on the House floor.
I do not believe that there has ever been a more reprehensible tax on the face of the earth than the death tax. The death tax represents not only a tax on the deceased, but also on their families. Husbands, wives, and children, and other relatives bear the burden of this tax while they are still struggling to cope with the loss of their loved one.
Democrats say repealing the tax is giving yet another huge break, mainly to the super wealthy, and that it will only dig the U.S. into a deeper fiscal hole. Democrat Congressman James Moran of Virginia.
We will take billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars out of federal revenue to reward that 0.3%. That's unfair and it's un-American.
President Bush, who promised tax reform, is hoping to march this history-making cut right through the Senate and the billions of the wealthy straight into the pockets of their children. This hour, On Point, the estate tax, the inheritance tax, the death tax, on the chopping block. We begin tonight in Washington with the latest developments. Jonathan Weissman is financial reporter for The Washington Post. I asked him what is likely to happen in the Senate.
Well, I have to say, I haven't felt this confident that something actually might get done on the estate tax for a long time, at least not since 2001 when they did pass the tax cut, that would eliminate the estate tax for all of 1 year and then it would come back. The major coalition that put this issue onto the table, the affluent businesses and families that kind of bankrolled it, the huge coalitions of small business groups and farm groups, they are beginning to splinter, and some of them are willing to take something short of full repeal. And once that begins, the process of looking for something that is not quite perfect in their eyes, then there's room to negotiate, and that negotiation is actually really starting to take off.
So it's the fourth time in 4 years that the House has passed repeal. The Senate's never done it. They need 60 votes to overcome a threatened Democrat filibuster. And how might they get to that 60 votes in the Senate?
Well, right now, very few people pay the estate tax. I mean, the most recent data in 2001, about 2% of all decedents, dead people, paid any estate tax at all. And they're talking about raising the threshold to maybe $3.5 million, maybe even more, meaning that somebody's estate worth $3.5 million or less would be totally untaxed, and the only thing that would be taxed would be something over $3.5 million.
And for couples, this would be $7 million. So
yes.
I see the Democrats here calculating that as 99.7% of all estates would be exempt at that point, effectively.
Exactly. Now, the small business groups that are willing to talk still say that a $3.5 million exemption is not good enough. They want a $10 million exemption. That way they can say no small business would ever possibly be hit by this. That would be a $10 million exemption for individuals and $20 million for couples. They're also looking for a rate of about 15%, the capital gains rate, of anything that would be left taxed.
As opposed to the 55% that it was when all this began in 2001.
That's right. It's 55%. Now it's scheduled to go down to about 47%. They didn't do a whole lot on the rate in the 2001 tax cut. They just mostly raised the threshold or the exemption.
Jonathan, if it went from the $3.5 million exemption per person, again, $7 million for a couple, to $10 million or $20 million for a couple, if the lower one would only hit 0.3% of all estates, what would this higher number exemption hit? What portion?
I can't even give you a fraction. It'd be like 0.00001%. I mean, the whole point is actually if they got a $10 million exemption with a 15% rate above that, it would be tantamount to completely eliminating the estate tax anyway. And, of course, that's why they're saying, well, we could live with that. You could probably count the number of estates taxed each year, maybe on two hands.
So are there enough Democrats, and it would only take a few here, are there enough Democrats who would come over and vote for that very large dollar exemption from the estate tax?
I don't think something that big. But I think that if that's the Republican starting position, I think that they will get down probably to an exemption level that enough Democrats can support. There are a lot of Democrats who just want to say, we did the right thing, we saved some of the estate tax, which is exactly why the repeal people really don't want to save any of the estate tax. They feel like if they save any of it, it will just start to grow from there.
The Democrats are saying today that President Bush's plan would cost $290 billion in lost revenue over the next decade when the country is facing very large deficits already. They say their more modest plan would cost about $72 billion. Is this the main plank of their complaint now, that this is too expensive for the country when it has these deficits to give up these taxes?
This is the main complaint. I mean, they always cry, nobody's paying this, your friends aren't paying it, you're not going to pay it, why do you care? And this argument that it costs too much or that nobody pays it has just proven to be not a winning argument, because the Republicans have appealed to an American sense of fairness. They say, look, it's just wrong to tax the hard-earned wealth and earnings of an individual when he dies. You know, no taxation without respiration. They have all sorts of great lines. And the American people, by and large, seem to agree. They just do not like the idea of taxing inheritance.
But what about the idea of a perpetual aristocracy whose vast wealth is never taxed generation after generation, the kind of Paris Hilton complaint that's
right.
thrown around?
Ironically, that was Teddy Roosevelt's argument when he established the estate tax, and he said this is not a country of an aristocracy, that this is a country of equality at birth, and that one class of people should not be born to a different level of opportunity than another class. But for some reason, opponents of estate tax repeal never really latched onto this argument. They are starting to latch onto this argument, largely because people like Michael Gratz, a professor at Yale, have said, why aren't you latching onto this argument?
And we'll be speaking to him in a moment.
It might be a little too late.
So here we are. It's passed the House. The repeal is, in any case. The whole issue is in the Senate now. Senator John Kyle of Arizona on the Republican side has been tasked to strike a deal with the Democrats. Senator Charles Schumer of New York leading negotiations for the Democrat side. What's the likely timetable for these conversations, Jonathan?
I think that they will probably strike some kind of deal before maybe June. I think that Charles Grassley, the chairman of the Finance Committee in the Senate, wants to do this more than anything else. He's from a farm state. Farmers really care about this, even though very few farmers actually pay it. And he really wants to get a permanent change in the estate tax law this year, no matter what. And if that means something short of repeal, he'll take it. But I think if he wants to do it, look, they probably aren't going to do Social Security. They might. But they certainly probably aren't going to do the other big domestic issue, tax reform, this year. Things are just moving too slow. So I think the estate tax has a real chance of becoming law this year, and I would imagine probably by midsummer.
Jonathan Weissman, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Jonathan Weissman is financial reporter for The Washington Post. He spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about death, wealth, and taxes in America. You can join the conversation. Are you for or against the inheritance tax? And what's the core issue here? The right to leave every last million or billion to your kids? Or Teddy Roosevelt's warning against a permanent aristocracy of wealth? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. Joining us now from Wallingford, Connecticut, is Michael Gratz. He's professor of law at Yale University and co-author with Ian Shapiro of Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth. Michael Gratz is former deputy assistant secretary for tax policy at the U.S. Treasury under President George H.W. Bush. Michael Gratz, thanks for joining us tonight.
Pleasure, Tom.
Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you along.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Gratz.
Hi, Tom.
Michael Gratz, tell us, first of all, just where did this move come from? You look back to the beginning of it. Where did this move to get rid of the inheritance tax emerge from?
Well, our book is just an amazing political story. It began actually way outside of the Beltway in the early 1990s. A woman in Orange County, California, the owner of the Seattle Times in the state of Washington, an estate planner in Alabama, and a handful of people who were allied with them got together and started arguing for repeal of the estate tax. And it was so unrealistic at the time that when Pat Saldano hired Patton Boggs, which is one of the Washington best-known lobbying firms.
Yes.
The joke around Washington from the insiders was that she was getting the most expensive tours of the Capitol that anyone had ever received.
That this was such a hopeless journey that they were setting off on, but they were joined by the heirs to the fortunes of the Mars Candy Company, the Gallo Wine Company, the Campbell Soup Company, lots of deep pockets there. Here we are, a dozen years later, this thing may be passing.
Exactly. And they put together a coalition in the mid-90s called the Family Business Estate Tax Coalition, which was started, as I say, by these outsiders. It was ultimately taken over by the insiders, the National Federation of Independent Businesses being probably the most important trade association in the city of Washington, and then ultimately taken over when George Bush became president by something called the Tax Relief Coalition, which was a broader group of people arguing for the Bush tax cut.
And on went the parade. Michael Kretz, we'll get more detail on that, but in a word, we want to hear where you're coming from. Do you think it's good or bad for the country, for the economy, to repeal the inheritance tax?
Well, I've always felt that we ought to have a tax on large inheritances, mainly based on concerns about equality of opportunity and windfalls that the beneficiaries receive. But our book, Death by a Thousand Cuts, is really not about that. We don't take a position at all about that.
But you give us the whole rich story there. Michael Kretz, please stand by. We have to take a short break here. Jack Beatty, we'll be right back. We're talking tonight about the inheritance tax, the estate tax, the death tax, going, maybe almost gone. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fate of the estate tax, repealed this week by the House and now before the U.S. Senate. With me tonight, Michael Kretz. He's professor of law at Yale University, author, co-author of the new book, Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth. He's former deputy assistant secretary for tax policy at the U.S. Treasury under the first President Bush. Jack Beatty's with us as well, and you can join the conversation. The inheritance tax, are you for it or against it? Would you vote yay or nay on repealing the estate tax, the death tax? And what's the core issue here for you? The right to leave every last million to your kids? Or Teddy Roosevelt's warning against a permanent aristocracy of wealth? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Michael Kretz, you've looked at this in depth. Remind us, what was the kind of status quo view of this for most of the last century, and what was the new message that the opponents of the estate tax brought onto the scene that apparently has been so effective?
Well, this was the mystery that we began the book with, which was how could a tax that affected such a small slice of America's richest families be repealed and become so hated by the press and by the public. And the answer to that was that for a very long time, the Teddy Roosevelt view that we ought to break up very large concentrations of wealth, and the Andrew Carnegie view, which was that Carnegie used to say that it was the worst thing you could do for your child was to leave them too much money.
Mm-hmm.
And those views really held sway until this effort. And in this effort, the proponents of repeal really developed a moral argument. It was, you know, usually taxes or often taxes are about economic arguments, but the economic arguments really played a very, very minor role here.
And that argument was?
The moral argument was that this was an attack on the work ethic of the American people, that people who have saved and worked hard their whole lives are entitled to leave their money to their children. And there was a double tax argument. I'm a little suspicious of double tax arguments, but there was an argument that was made that this was a second tax, that these people had also paid income tax. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's not true. But the point of that is that there are many double taxes. You know, Joe Sixpack pays taxes on his wages and on his income, and then when he buys goods at the store. And we've never thought that was such a huge problem. So I think it was really the Protestant work ethic attack that was the most successful.
So as we sit here tonight, the estate tax is due to expire briefly in 2009, 2010, then come back. This is all about making that expiration permanent. and it's passed the House. It may well pass the Senate. If not an outright repeal, then a lifting of the exemption so high that it would only touch a minute fraction of American estates. Why has there been no effective counter to this effort? I mean, as you say, Michael Gratz, and everybody points out, it's a tiny portion of the country that would be affected by this. Americans used to think about tons and tons of inherited wealth in the hands of a few as not a healthy thing for the country. What happened to that point of view?
Well, there was no real organized opposition. There was no AARP, as there is in the case of Social Security, coming in and creating a counterforce. There were a number of counterforces. We look in our book, Death by a Thousand Cuts, at what happened to those counterforces, and we were puzzled that the insurance industry didn't create any opposition, that the charities, who actually have a whole lot to lose, $25 billion by some estimates in charitable giving, if this tax is repealed.
That is because the wealthy would have no incentive to kind of give it away to philanthropy before the tax man hit it.
Well, that's right. Now you either give it to the government or you can give it to charity, and if you give it to your children, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, the government will take about half of it. But if the tax is repealed, then it's between the charity and your children or great-grandchildren, and the charities, by all estimates, are likely to suffer.
Strong support for this repeal, strong opposition as well. We will hear from both tonight. Jack Beatty, I want to hear you on this and the change in the chemistry of American politics, American cultural and political outlook, I guess, that has brought us to this point where the estate tax may, in fact, go away.
Yeah, I hate to think that so much of it depends on framing, but a lot of it does. I mean, a clever young chap named Luntz, Frank Luntz, relabeled this thing the death tax, and that seemed to set it on its way. Oh, my gosh, we can't tax death. But, you know, it's ironic that the House Republicans and Mr. Bush make a moral argument for this, for abolishing this tax, at a time when the House is passing, is working on cutting Medicaid by $30 to $35 billion, cutting Medicaid, food stamps, other programs for the poor, including SSI, which goes to disabled people and the elderly, the Earned Income Tax Credit, which supplements the wages of the working poor, and foster care for adoption services. Already, Mr. Bush has recommended that 300,000 people lose food stamps, and the House may well make that many more because they want to preserve farm price supports. The cost of food stamps is $1 per person per meal. If the House cuts go through, it could mean eliminating Medicare for as many as 2.5 million working mothers who would lose that. It could mean putting as many as 300,000 disabled or elderly people out off SSI.
And these cuts because the cupboards are bare, because the fiscal cupboards the deficit is so large.
Because we are cutting taxes for Paris Hilton.
And she seems to be in fairly good form already on the financial side. I want to get the pro-repeal view in here. Tim Kaine joins us from Washington. He's a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a former senior economist at the Joint Economic Committee of the U.S. Congress. Tim Kaine, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks, Tom.
So you know the debate. The Republicans say it's wrong to tax what someone works so hard for. It's going to hurt businesses and farmers, and of course it would take money away from the simply very, very wealthy as well. The Democrats say, or Teddy Roosevelt said, we don't want to have a permanent aristocracy in this country. Why pass millions, billions down to kids who did nothing really to earn it? How do you see it, Tim?
Well, I think it's how 70% to 80% of Americans see this. And maybe there's been a change in opinion, but I think you have to agree, Americans understand economics better. And they agree with economists now who've been arguing for years that incentives matter. And when we tax capital as a nation, that hurts companies, that hurts job creation. There are estimates that the existence of taxing capital in the form of this estate tax costs up to 250,000 jobs every year. So the Americans understand that. They understand that if you tax somebody's income once, if you want them to keep it and invest it rather than just spend it because they're afraid of the government taking a second bite, then you don't tax at the occasion of death. It is a moral issue, but it's also an economic issue.
Now, do you really think that's it? Do you really think that's what has persuaded Americans? Michael Gratz is making the case that it's been much more the moral issue, the fairness issue that's been put out there.
Well, I do, Tom. I think when communism fell, it made everybody take a hard look at some of their assumptions, that you can build a society that you want to believe is the way the world should work and it falls apart, or you can build a society that recognizes people pursue profit, they save when the government gives them incentives to save, and that makes everybody better off.
The United States seemed to do pretty well in the 20th century with an inheritance tax, I mean, famously well. So what do you mean fall apart?
Oh, I mean, if we look at the Soviet Union, which...
No, but I mean the United States had an inheritance tax for a century, has had, and it's become the wealthiest country in the world. So I'm just pursuing that. It doesn't seem to have fallen apart under the weight of an estate tax.
Right. No, we've gotten a lot of things right in this country, but we can always improve. I think we could all agree. Hmm. And Michael is a great tax scholar. I'd point out that he's argued that we should shift more to consumption taxation, and I think particularly forced Republicans to think more about value-added taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's 180 degrees different from taxing savings and investment, which is what essentially the estate tax does.
Michael Gratz, what about it? The economic argument for essentially abolishing the estate tax, does it stack up to you?
Well, even assuming there's economics. One of the interesting things about debates in Washington now is there are always economics on both sides of the issues, and the Brookings Institution has very different estimates of what the Heritage Foundation has, and it's very hard for anyone, even an expert, to sort them out. If it's 250,000 jobs a year, which is the highest estimate, Tim's estimate, that's about, also $50 billion of revenue a year. Those are expensive jobs. The most interesting thing about what's going on is this polling point. I do want to mention that.
This is Frank Lutz's polls.
Everybody says, well, 70 or 80% of Americans are against it. And one of the geniuses, in addition to labeling it the death tax, but one of the genius moves in the coalitions for repealing the tax was always to poll the estate tax issue alone. So no one was ever asked the question that Jack Beatty put earlier, which is, would you want to get rid of food stamps or the estate tax?
Mm-hmm.
Or the question that E.J. Dionne put in a column this week, which was, do you want to save a quarter of the potential cuts in Social Security by keeping this tax? It was always polled, are you for or against repeal? And even the liberal groups that started polling very, very late in this story, well after the train had left the station, also polled it alone. So, it's not clear what the American people are for if they're given choices. And now that we're in a period of deficits, as Jack has pointed out, I think these choices have gotten a lot harder than they were when we thought we had a lot of surpluses.
I want to begin to hear from our callers. A lot of them want to join this conversation. Ken is calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I have a comment and a question, and
yeah.
It's about principles.
Okay.
And it seems, on the one hand, we have a principle that says, well, if there are 98 of us and two of them, or 99.7 of us and 0.3 of them, let's go take their stuff.
Or some of it.
Well, let's go take, any of it. And on the other hand, the principle seems to be, I've earned something, it's mine, I've been taxed on it. What right do you have to impose a second tax on what I own, and the 98 of you or the 99.7 of you don't have to pay it?
Do you think those are both credible arguments, Ken, or not?
I think the argument of the bullies, the argument of the looters who want to take that which other people have earned so they can fund their pet projects is not a credible argument.
Are they looters in the first place when they come for income tax? Are they looters then?
Well, yes, they are to a certain extent, unless they're taking income tax for those things that the founders, that the Constitution specifies they should be able to take it for. Anything over and above that is, in effect, looting.
And what about the general health of the country? I mean, so repeal the income tax too. Would that be a better country, Ken?
Repeal the income tax.
Well, you said they were looters if they came after either one.
What?
You said they were looters if they came after either one, and I'm just asking, would it be a better country?
The income tax funds more than that which the Constitution allows the federal government to do, yeah.
And would it be, some people would be able to give a lot more to their kids, and the kids would no doubt love that, but would it be a better country, Ken?
It would be a fair country. It would be a fair country because you would be taxing the very rich, the very poor, and the people in the middle on the same principle, and I come back to that point. The principle is, why do you have a right to tax some people twice on the income they've made, and other people only once?
We got it.
Ken, live by principle.
We got it. Thanks very much for your call. Jack Beattie, I hear you there.
Yeah, can I speak to that on this taxing twice? According to the Survey of Consumer Finances, unrealized capital gains, that is, capital gains on which no taxes have been paid, make up about 56% of estates which are worth more than $10 million. So half of estates worth over $10 million, no tax has been paid. In the case of family-owned businesses, studies suggest that between 66 and 80% of the value of those are unrealized capital gains. And this tax, you know, yes, it's at 47%. It was at 55% for years. But you know what the effective rate was, according to the IRS?
No,
the
I do not.
The effective rate in 2003, 18.8%. I pay more than that on my income.
Well, so point of principle, though, Ken wants to raise. Michael Gratz, how about it? I mean, this makes your point in a way. Ken says, let's talk about this as a matter of principle. How do you see the principles being contested here?
It makes the point, and I want to make one important point about the second mystery in this political story. The second mystery for us was, how did these coalitions hold together when it was clear even in 2001 that the Democrats would have gone along with a $3.5 million exemption.
That is the coalition of the super-rich families, Mars, Gallo.
No, the super-rich.
Along with the business organizations,
the
associations.
The super-rich, we know, you know, they're betting on full repeal because for them $3.5 million is chump change. But for the farmers and the small businesses that make up the national NFIB and coalition members like that, $3.5 million was the whole ball game, but they were like Ken. That is, they felt that this was a matter of principle, and if it was immoral to tax the guy with $100,000, it was immoral to tax the guy with $100 billion. And it is an argument like that is an attack on the whole progressive tax system that we've lived with throughout the last century. And that's why this is not just a conversation about inherited wealth, but it's a conversation about the whole structure of the U.S. tax system.
Let's get another call. Jim is calling from Dubuque, Iowa. Hello, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, there's so many things I'd like to say. One thing, the Farm Bureau in Iowa never was asked and could not find a farm ever that had to be sold to pay an inheritance tax.
And there are a lot of farms in Iowa.
Right. But the point is that the Republicans only are striving to prevent the repeal of this tax for the very rich. Anytime an effort has been made to set the limit higher at like $4 million or five or whatever, which would include, you know, everybody except maybe 0.1% of the population, the Republicans block any discussion of it at that level. It amounts to the same kind of tax. It's not it's not being taxed twice for a person that's dead. It's a tax on a windfall for the person inheriting it, like they won a lottery. You pay tax on lottery winnings. Those people didn't earn that money.
So you say keep that inheritance tax and keep it as a matter of principle, you're saying?
Yes. If with inflation we need to raise the limit to protect small businesses or something like that, that's fine. But the people who are paying the ticket here, and you can see who's doing it because they will not allow discussion of it at an intermediate level, they want to protect the super rich and allow those people, this is part of an overall program to allow them to not pay any taxes at all, because they also want to get rid of the capital gains tax. So these people would be able to pass on hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, not pay taxes on any of the income from capital gains.
Tim, we got it, and we're talking about it tonight. Jim, excuse me. Tim Kaine in Washington, you gave the economic argument before. Right. What about on the principle front? How do you see it?
The economics and the moral argument are both on the side of full repeal, and here's why. Imagine if you have $1 billion and you know the government's going to come after you with a 55% tax if you die with that money. What incentive do you have to keep it saved? You would spend it.
President Bush says spending is good. President Bush has often encouraged Americans to spend.
Yeah, sometimes he has. Economists will tell you saving's good. It creates jobs. It creates real companies. It creates wealth for everyone. It's better in the long term to encourage that saving. So the economic is a slam dunk to have a full repeal on this.
But if it's $1 billion you've got, I mean, you can't spend all that on Mars bars.
You
right?
Have little faith in the American people.
Well, I don't know. Tim Kaine, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
All right. All the best.
Tim Kaine, research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Michael Gratz, Jack Beatty, stick with us. We've got a short break coming up here. We're talking tonight about the fate of the estate tax. Repealed by the House and now before the Senate. Listeners, you can join us. What about the deficit? Is it the time to be cutting taxes again for the very wealthy? And why is opposition to a tax repeal that benefits so few shared by so many? Where do you stand? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the inheritance tax, the estate tax, the death tax, going, and maybe almost gone. You can join us tonight. What about the middle class, even the upper middle class, pinched by the alternate, minimum tax, without benefit from an estate tax repeal? Why are they passed over in favor of tax cut for the rich? Or do you somehow feel better seeing the estate tax repealed, even if it has no impact directly on you at all? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Joined tonight by our own Jack Beatty, by Michael Gratz, professor of law at Yale University, co-author of the new book, Death by a Thousand Cuts, and right now from Los Angeles, by Ed McCaffrey, professor of law at the University of Southern California, author of Fair Not Flat, How to Make the Tax System Simpler and Better. Ed McCaffrey, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
So you make an argument for the repeal, or at least the diminishment of the estate tax as well. What is it, Ed?
Well, and I want to sort of strike a middle ground. I think what's being missed here is the fact, I think Jack Beatty alluded to it in that 18% effective rate, the estate tax doesn't work. It's not very effective at breaking up large concentrations of wealth. It's not very effective at creating meaningful progressivity. It's an easily avoidable tax. And what I'm concerned about is a genuine progressivity across the tax system. What I've said in comments before the Treasury Department is in America, we tax people when they work, when they save, when they marry, when they give, and when they die. And I think giving and dying are terrible times to tax. I think we can tax people when they spend, and we can have a progressive spending tax.
So you're saying get rid of this tax. Go ahead and do it on the belief or the hope that you'll go to a value-added tax of some kind instead.
That's right. Michael, and I'm a friend of Michael's, a big fan of his work, and like Michael himself, I want to push his book with Ian Shapiro, Death by a Thousand Cuts. I agree with, you know, perhaps we could have a value-added tax, but we need progressivity in that spending tax. And then we don't have to tax people.
How do you get that
die
in a spending tax? How do you get progressivity in a spending tax? Just because the rich are going to buy yachts, so they'll pay more?
Well, what's very nice about that, Tom, it's a wonderful question. And what you can do is simply list up your sources of income like we do now, have an unlimited deduction for savings. If people are working and saving, more power to them. So we'll have unlimited IRA plans, unlimited 401k plans. If people want to pass their 401ks, their IRAs, their savings onto their children, that's fine with me. And if the children pull money out of the family business, the family farm, the IRA, or the 401k to spend it, that's when we tax them.
So we'll have
that 401k treatment right through the act of death. We won't encourage wealthy people to spend it all and die broke. We won't encourage rich people to avoid the estate tax by giving it away today. We'll tax people consistently and progressively at the right time, which is when they spend.
So a kind of perfect world you're describing there. Michael Gratz, how about it? Wall Street Journal says this aristocracy of wealth already exists despite the current tax. They say because super rich families like Paris Hilton's family have always found ways to avoid or mitigate it through offshore accounts, tax-sheltered foundations, and right on down. Ed McCaffrey says, good riddance. It doesn't work anyway. What do you say, Michael Gratz?
Well, it clearly is a tax that a lot of people have found ways to minimize in lots of ways. On the other hand, the estimates going out after 2011 are that you're going to collect $50 to $70 billion a year from the people who inherit large amounts of wealth. This is even with a $3.5 million exemption. And, you know, you can say it doesn't work, but $50 billion a year is a lot of money when we're in the kind of financial shape that we're in currently. And my fear is that if you wait until people spend it, when you're talking about the very, very large concentrations of wealth, you're not going to collect it for, you know, generations, if ever. I don't know that the Hiltons or whoever we want to talk about, the Rockefellers, will ever use up all of that wealth by spending it. It's very hard to spend that much money. And, you know, the evidence is that there are a lot of people that don't go wild about spending because of the estate tax. They still want to pass on
as much as they
significant
can
sums to their to their children. So a billionaire, you know, even if you had a 50% tax, which I think is probably a little too high, you know, instead of being able to pass on a billion, would be able to pass on 500 million.
Still not a bad piece of change.
It's not a bad piece of change. They're much more likely to do that than to go out and spend it.
Mary's calling from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah.
Basically, I just think it's so funny that people talk about this death tax as affecting only the super rich.
Well, not only, I guess, but it, I guess the statistics here are that it's largely the very wealthy.
Well, I have an example. My father died this last summer, and he has six children of his own and another child who he supported.
Right.
And he died with about $3.5 million.
Had he built up his own business or just saved and invested well,
he
Mary?
Saved his butt off.
Mm-hmm.
He drove an 8-year-old car. He lived in a duplex that he rented out part of.
Mm-hmm.
He lived very modestly. He never bought anything for himself.
So a thrifty man who put together a nice nest egg there, more than.
That's right. And I really think that his idea there was to pass this on to his children. And I think he believed that he would eventually avoid the death tax.
And what happened?
And he didn't. And we basically paid out about half of that money, about 40% of that money, just this January to the government. And it's kind of sad. Like, when I actually saw the paperwork, it just made me especially sad because my dad had, it was his thing, you know,
his
savings.
We hear you, and that hits you very materially. Ed McCaffrey, speak to that. Mary's father, $3.5 million in savings, seven heirs. 40% goes to the government. Do the math. He's not passing on anything that look like an obscene amount to most Americans.
No, and I want to loop that back to Michael's last comment. I mean, the estate tax does raise some money. I'm very skeptical of the projections that it will ever raise $50 billion. Right now it raises about $20 or $25 billion. That's about 1% of federal revenue. And the people it really falls on, a lot of the people it falls on are people who were surprised by an early death, perhaps like I think it was Nancy or Mary's father. Mary's father. People who were surprised by an early death who didn't get around to planning. I feel very bad. I feel immoral as a lawyer and a tax professor telling Mary this, but the fact of the matter is, if her father had seen an estate tax lawyer 6 months before he died, they would not have paid that money.
But here we are, and the Democrats
are getting money from people who haven't planned not to pay the money. It does not seem fair to me.
They get hit hard, but now I guess the Democrats are proposing that $3.5 million would be exempt, $7 million for a couple. That would have covered this entirely, but still, you wouldn't have people who are inheriting a billion or, who knows, $10 billion, $50 billion in cash just shoving it right in the kid's pocket. What's wrong with that path, Ed?
Well, you know, just one thing. Let me quote, there was a study in 1976 by George Cooper calling the estate tax a voluntary tax. And in 1976, when we had a tougher tax, Cooper had a case study of a family that avoided the estate tax. It was the DuPont family on a then wealth of $300 million. So I think if you raise the exemption, and I think we will do that, it's interesting that no one in America except possibly Russell Feingold is talking about a stronger estate tax. Everyone is talking about having some kind of higher exemption level. Then we'll get calls from, you know, the Marys of the future whose father saved $10 million and paid some.
Right.
But we'll still have people who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars who are not paying any tax because they planned around it.
So there's the argument of tax experts. Marvin's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Marvin. You're on the air.
Right. I think it's interesting that those who want to repeal the estate tax keep using the word fairness. And I think the best way to counteract that argument is to use the argument that Bill Gates' father is using. Bill Gates' father is heading up an organization trying to keep the estate tax.
Yes.
And he says that all of us, very wealthy people, have benefited through this society. And he's talking about you and I have created a lot of conditions under which he made all that money.
Mm-hmm.
School system,
mm-hmm.
a functioning economy, a structure that enabled him to create that great wealth. So he has, he feels that he should pay back some of that.
So you're saying the fairness argument works the other way too?
Well, basically, it's very
or only
fair.
That way to you.
Well, I think it outweighs the fairness argument that I've heard on this show tonight.
We've got it, Marvin. Thanks very much for your call. Jack Beatty, this is kind of along the lines of Teddy Roosevelt, who said, the man of great wealth owes a particular obligation to the state because he derives special advantage from the mere existence of government. Marvin's picking up on that a century later.
Yes, and the man of great wealth has a disproportionate advantage because the laws, essentially the law of property, protects his wealth to a degree that it doesn't ours. But of course those were presumptions of the progressive era. It was reacting to the Gilded Age, to an age of when there was no income tax, when vast fortunes were accrued, when the behavior of the rich was even worse than it is today, and we do not live in a progressive age. Assumptions are not progressive today. They're probably, from the conservative, call them. Mm. And when you look at things that way, you don't think about society. You don't think about obligations. You don't think about fairness in terms of, making the rich pay their way. You think, my God, I could be rich too, and I don't want the government getting my money.
I made this, and it's mine, and it's my children's. Dan's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This topic today, you guys have set my hair on fire.
Whoops. What do you think, Dan?
I think that the repeal of the progressive, the repeal of the estate tax.
Yes.
The idea of it just absolutely, again, sets my hair on fire.
Why exactly? Why?
I think, I'm curious as to what the founding fathers may have, what we might glean from some of their writings, and I wonder if Jack Beatty might have a tap on that. But I think that it just flies in the face of what the early colonists in this country tried to establish with our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and our sort of a land of the free and the opportunity for everyone.
That is getting away from the permanent aristocracy, crossing an ocean to do it.
We have a permanent aristocracy attempting to set itself up in this country again, I think. And I think that permanent would-be aristocracy is also quite happy to see a growing permanent peasant class in this country. And it just drives me absolutely up the wall.
Been there, done that, came to this country not to be that.
Tom, I think Warren Buffett was responsible for a brief quote here. He says, giving a free pass to the estates of the wealthy is like awarding a gold medal to the grandson of the Olympic 1936 Olympic gold medalist based on genealogy.
Right. Go out and run the race yourself, young man. Dan, thanks very much for your call. I'll come to Jack on that, but let me ask Michael Gratz to you first. I mean, where does this go? Maybe we'd get rid of this and adopt something like Ed McCaffrey is proposing, but maybe we wouldn't. Maybe we just get rid of the estate tax. Billions get passed on. We already see an era where politics is said to be bought and paid for. Money kind of runs things. If that money is concentrated generation after generation in the same families, is there still something of some dynamic in the American economic system that will distribute power, political power, or does it get concentrated?
Well, that's an excellent question. The way money is used in politics these days is an important part of our book, and it is clear that it has been used very effectively in this exercise, although not in the campaign contributions, but in other ways, which we talk about. But the key, I think, here is that even if it's repealed, it's very hard for me to imagine. With the projections of the kinds of shortfalls that we're going to have in federal revenues and the kinds of cuts that are going to have to be made in Social Security and Medicare and health spending, particularly going forward, that somebody's not going to stand up and say, but wait a minute, we don't treat these amounts that are coming from very wealthy prior generations as income to the youth or to the younger generations. So let's just tax them as income. I think once you focus on the recipients of the wealth rather than on the person who has built up the wealth, if you focus on Paris Hilton instead of Conrad Hilton, you come to a very different kind of conclusion about this tax. And you also, I think it would be fairer, actually, to restructure it. I've argued for restructuring it so that a family like Mary's that has six children wouldn't be hit the same as a family that has only one child and is getting the full $3.5 million.
Focusing on the next generation, in other words.
Focus on the recipients. The decedent couldn't take it with him anyway.
Ed McCaffrey, you've got a big vision of what you'd like to happen. Are you confident that that would happen or will when and if this tax is repealed? And if it doesn't, if we just repeal the tax and it's supposed to cost, what, something like $290 billion in the next 10 years, another $800 billion in the 10 years after that, that's a trillion plus. With the fiscal situation we've got, can we afford that? Is that just going to fall back on the shoulders of less well-off Americans?
Well, let me take the first part of that question first, Tom. No, I'm not confident. I haven't been confident since 1980. I got more depressed in 2000. I'm more depressed in 2004. But let me say, you know, I think as a tax expert and as a liberal, as a Democrat, I work with Democratic candidates. This, to me, is a discussion among friends about means. We all agree. I agree with Jack Beatty. I've always agreed with Michael Gratz. I want a progressive system. I think what Democrats have done is they've chosen bad means to their chosen ends. We have taxes that fall on when people work, when they save, when they marry, when they give, and when they die. The people don't like these taxes. And I think we keep saying the people are wrong, they should like these taxes.
Well, I don't know.
And these taxes are vulnerable. I think to get real progressivity, we need to have some kind of progressive spending tax. And I think the debate should really be about the estate tax. At the end of the day, it really doesn't much matter. I'm skeptical that it will raise the large numbers that are being bantered around, because it never has in history. So if we really, and we've had it, as I think you said, Tom, and Jack Beatty referred to, we've had it for a century, and we have very large wealthy families running around today.
In spite of that, so you say, let's find a new way. Jack, I want to come to you with our Spokane caller's question about founding fathers here and sort of opening impulses in the American experiment. We just got a minute here, but how do you see those intersecting with this conversation now about the gap between rich, middle, poor?
Well, the founding fathers brooded on Rome, on what happened to the Roman Republic. And one of the things that happened was it had a standing army, and that caused it tremendous problems. And it expanded abroad with imperialism, but let's leave that out. The other way it decayed was a decay in republicanism. And for the founding fathers, republicanism meant putting the greater good above the individual good. That was the essence. When Benjamin Franklin said, a republic, if you can keep it, that's what he meant.
Well, there we are. We'll be watching Congress as this proceeds. What a picture. Ed McCaffrey in Los Angeles, professor of law at University of Southern California and author of Fair Not Flat. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom, and thank my other guests.
And Michael Gratz at Yale, author, co-author of Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth. It's quite a story. Thank you for sharing it, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio. Support.